It's the beginning of a new year. It's actually a couple of weeks into it. A lot of things have changed. All the reports we hear are that your economy is very challenged. What I want to do today is go through the major basic ways to grow your business in good times or bad. But before I do that, I would like the various people on the call to give you a candid assessment or perspective of what their business is like right now. Competition, market, etc. And then we're going to go through things they can all do, no matter how hard the economy is, to get their business going and growing, okay? So less people are buying, more people are competing, prices are coming down, and quality is going down. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
So let's go through some basics that are critical for everybody to do in order to keep their business going and growing in a very difficult, competitive, and economic environment. The first thing we have to do is be very clear on who our best target audience is, because in a very competitive and economically challenging market, we cannot afford to waste time or money or people on suspects. We have to concentrate on prospects and highly qualified people. So we have to start by saying, do we understand and know where the best quality prospects exist? And that can be one of three things. It can be media, it can be locations, it can be categories of situations, but we have to do soul searching where we think, okay, who really has the highest and the best probability of buying our product, and where are they most easily reached? So that's the first thing. What will distinguish and differentiate you in this very difficult economy is your ability to concentrate and focus on the highest and the best possible sources of business for whatever it is you are selling and for whatever it is your offering is. So it's very important that you know that. We've taught you all over a period of time a lot of my marketing techniques. But even though we have, the truth is most of the people we have dealt with and interviewed do very little. They do word of mouth. They have a sales force knocking on doors. They may or may not run any ads. But we have to take a deep breath and reevaluate everything we're doing and how we're doing it and the message we are taking to the market in every communication that is being made, because this is a time where we live or die by how marketing strategic we are and how non-strategic our competitor is. So first of all, it's getting clear on who and where your most desirable market is. But now you've got to do some other soul searching, because you've got to decide, do you keep supporting your current unique selling proposition, or do you alter it because the market is changing? And that's a decision you have to make based on your assessment of how many people in the market really appreciate what you represent versus how many only want bottom line value. And this is very important. If you have within your product or service a much higher qualitative product or service, or a much higher performance level, or a much higher effectiveness You have to be able more than ever before to demonstrate and clearly present that to the market. If you do not have a major advantage, then you have to evaluate going after more volume, and there is not a right or a wrong. The first thing you have to do is what we call a truth process, where you look at what you do, you look at who you do it for, you look at how you do it, what it does differently, if it does, and how much more performance, benefit, advantage it brings people, and then you decide, is that strong enough? Is that meaningful enough? If you can powerfully distinguish and present it, that it will attract a niche of a market that you can own. If the answer is yes, that's what you go for. So this depends on many factors. If you're targeting a niche market and it's not large and you can distinguish yourself, it's probably worth continuing. If the market is huge and you have no great advantage other than you have physical presence, then you have to start evaluating how to compete but do a more superior job. But this, first of all, needs you to do some soul searching and some very clear and conscientious evaluation of what you bring to the marketplace that is different, superior, more desirable than that which they can get online or that they can get from the competitors. If you don't have any of that, you have two choices. One is increase your proposition so it offers more value. The other is compete more effectively with everybody else. And there is not a right or a wrong decision, but the first decision is to come to grips with whether or not you have enough value and enough uniqueness and enough appeal to attract a segment of a market that definitely exists. Most people do, but you might have to much more comprehensively develop and express your advantages, because most people, even the ones that have been through my training, don't do a good job of it. So now, let's go back to basic J. Abraham, which hopefully most of you have remembered. There are three ways to grow a business. First way is you attract more buyers, prospects first, and then you convert them to buyers. Second, you get the buyers spending more. Third, you get them buying more often or buying other things or referring more people. Today, because of the market conditions, the economy, the competition, you have to decide to do that masterfully. And we're going to go through it in a minute, but we have to decide to do it masterfully or not compete, because you can't compete unless you can outthink, outperform, outmarket, outreach the marketplace. And many of you have limited resources, so we have to use our ingenuity more than we do our cash. So a lot of you have grown your business almost organically. And by that I mean just because people buy from you because you're there or because you have salespeople in the field. Today, you have to be strategic. You have to be what's called integrative, which means you have to integrate a number of different activities together, whether you're going to sell locally or whether you're going to go online. And so let's go through some of the universal elements you must now learn to apply. You probably learned it at a seminar of mine or in my stuff, but you may never have applied it. So we're going to go through it one at a time. Now let me explain this so it's very clear. Because this applies to any approach you take. If you're going to send salespeople out, they have to only go to places where the buyers are or the prospects are the highest probability. And you have to know who that would be and what else they have purchased. And it's very advantageous if you can make partnerships with other companies or service companies that sell to the same type of a buyer but aren't competitive. If you are going to run advertisement, you can't afford to run general ads that reach everybody if only a small segment are your buyers. So you need to figure out how to reach only and pay only for the people that are the most desirable. That can be done a couple of ways. One is not use newspapers or general media, but find organizations that have the market you want and buy ads or access there. If you're going to run online ads, make sure you know exactly who you are targeting so you can isolate and only buy those kind of viewers and make sure your proposition, meaning the sales offering you make, is based on a bunch of advantages or benefits that the segment of the market that will appreciate it the most will respond to. These are very fundamental things, but if you don't know who you're going after, if you don't know where they are and how to best cost effectively reach them, if you don't know what will appeal to them the most, you can't maximize your limited opportunities. Okay, next. Depending on what you sell, product or service, depending on who you sell it to, one of the most powerful ways to gain advantage is to pre-contribute something valuable before they buy. It could be a report, it can be a sample, it can be a trial experience, it can be a webinar, it can be a very unique brochure, it can be a certificate giving them an extra 6 months of guarantee or service, it can be a bonus they automatically are entitled to when they buy. But by finding people who are good prospects, and before you try to completely sell them, you try to win their trust by giving them something that will get them excited and committed to you before they have to buy, it's a very powerful approach. The next area of competitive superiority is it deals with risk reversal and guarantees. Now, you've probably learned it from me, but I'm going to give you a new education in it because I'm going to modify it for China. The first concept is that taking the risk away from the buyer in normal situations gives the seller advantage. If I say you buy it, but if it doesn't perform, you can return it in 45 days, that's better. Okay, so normally when you take the risk away from the buyer, it gives the seller, the person selling it, greater appeal and advantage. That's normal. However, in your culture, I am not certain people wouldn't take advantage of that. So I'm going to give you some alternative ways to use risk reversal advantageously but not dangerously for yourself. So first thing is, whatever your product or service is, instead of giving them their money back if they're unhappy, you can give them more protection or more benefits or more bonuses when they buy it from you as opposed to buying it from a competitor. And I will give you examples once you explain this. Okay, so normally I would tell someone, give the buyer a longer time period to try it out before the purchase is considered binding. But I'm afraid that your market might take advantage. So instead, I strongly suggest that you do the following, that you add a longer period of either service, like in other words, if the normal service guarantee is 9 months, you might give a year and a half. If the normal service is they have to bring it in, you might offer within 20 miles to pick it up. If the normal service, they don't get a temporary replacement, you might offer a temporary replacement. If the normal purchase, like an air conditioner, has 20 feet of hose, you might offer 40. But it's making your proposition far more valuable than the competitors, no matter what way somebody buys. You want to be incomparable to anyone else because your value is so much superior. So that's the first thing, and there are many ways to do it. And the guideline on which way or combination ways to do it has to do with what your competition does that you can do better, and I've got to explain to you. Your attitude might be, well, that's going to cost me money. And the response is, yes, but if the level of people that take advantage of you are small, and if the extra cost of 20 feet of hose or of 6 extra months of service is modest, but it doubles or triples the number of people who choose you instead of the competition, the cost is small compared to the additional profit it makes you. So the next approach to being competitively superior has to do with bundling and packaging and creating proprietary offers. So if you're competing in a fiercely and ruthlessly competitive environment and everybody is selling the same thing and it's very brutal, what you can do to gain advantage is combine other products or services that normally are purchased along with, after, or during the purchase of your product or service and put them together as a very advantageously priced package where you may not make much money on the other items you package, but you have advantage because your offer is dramatically superior to everybody who's offering just the one product or service. For example, they are participating in this group consulting program. They may or may not have gone to a live seminar. But if we had packaged together a live seminar with the consulting at a lesser price, we might have had a much more appealing offer. We wouldn't have made as much, but we would have been much more appealing. And they've got to look at their products, at their services, pardon my voice, at what other people buy when they right before they buy their products, when they during the when they purchase their products after, and look and see how they can package or bundle together at much more advantageous prices, because what they will do is create a proprietary that their competitors cannot compete against, and it'll give them advantage. In order to increase the number of buyers, you need to increase the quality and the quantity of sources that you can reach, partner with, or cost-effectively access. Most people that we've met do word of mouth or referrals, but they have to start looking at what a new buyer is worth to them in long-term profit. This has to do, Fiona, with the concept called lifetime value, which is how many times somebody rebuys, how much profit they would make, what they're worth, because the entrepreneurs watching, the professionals watching, have to be able to look at new sources or existing sources that they've never used. And sources can mean partnerships with organizations that have the same market. It could be media. It can be partnering with other sales forces. It can mean putting what a kiosk is, like a booth in somebody else's store or somebody else's shopping area that has the same market. It can be getting to speak to different groups. It could be all of those, but in an environment and in a competitive market like this, they have no choice. They have to grow or they die, and I refuse to let them die, so they have to grow. The way they grow is to use their mind better than their competitors. So can you explain that best? Now, please understand, some of the greatest growth and achievement has occurred worldwide in the business world during times of adversity. So I know it's tough. I know it's stressful. I know it's financially painful, but their only other choice is to give up, and I refuse to even consider that for them because they have the ability to outthink, outmarket, outstrategize, outcontribute, outposition the competition, and that's what they must do because they're better than their average competitor. They just have never allowed their marketing genius to be turned on and then turned up. And this is their opportunity. The next thing is the second category. How do you get people buying more each time you have a sales transaction? And there are many ways. So let's go through them, okay? The first and the easiest is, and we have to go back through preeminence, and that's a whole full discussion, but is to sell them a higher quality and a bigger combination of products and services at one time. Most products or services are used in combinations with other products or services that are used before, during, or after the sale. Even if they are not in the business currently of selling those other products, it is extremely worthwhile for them to partner with people who provide those other products so they can put together packages. So if, for example, I was having a party and you were selling glasses, but somebody else sold plates, and somebody else rented tables, and somebody else sold the alcohol, and that was legal, and you put it all together as a package, you can make a lot more from the transaction, and you would actually be providing a service both in access and in pricing to the client. That's just one example. So that's one approach. Another approach is to sell a long-term supply. In other words, the Walmarts and the, I don't know what you have, Sam's Clubs, but they became popular in the States because most people would buy a week's supply, 1 week's, and they would sell a year's supply. So if you can make a great value to people on a larger quantity, even if you don't make as much profit per item, you can sell a lot larger total unit of sale. Another approach is if you have a product that people buy over and over again, automatically sign them up to get delivery or shipping of the product every month, and just bill their credit card or whatever approach that you guys use to bill. That's another approach. Totally different, but it's a twist on what I said earlier. No matter what industry or category you're in, if there are other products or services that people buy along with or during or before or after, you could make those products your profit product and the normal product you sell your attraction product. And by that I mean, right now, this is a container, Fiona, that I have in my hand, and it has candles. And Christy, my wife, if you look in it, it's got burnt candles. She keeps cutting out the candles and buying new candles, right?
Hmm.
If I was in the container business, but I knew I was going to get one sale, but instead I told people if they bought this container, or if they bought 12 candles, I'd give them the container, I would make a lot more money on the 12 candles than I probably would the container. Do you understand that? Okay. Mm-hmm. So the key here is thinking differently. You are paid in business to think wiser, broader, deeper, more innovatively than your competitor, and it could never be more important to Chinese entrepreneurs than in an environment like this, because if you think and act like everybody else, your business will be compromised. If you think and act differently than everybody else, you can thrive. So just make that point, and then I'll continue. And I'm giving you all an expansive education in all that is possible for you to outperform the trend of what is happening in your markets and in your economy. I don't expect you to do all of them, but most of you are doing none of them. So, excuse me. So if you pick and choose those elements that are the most easy for you to understand and apply, I promise your business will do better. Most people in business, and this is my old strategy of the diving board versus the Parthenon. Most people in business tend to have built their business on one, what we call a driver, a source, an approach that generates most of their business. For many of it, it's just a store in a location. For many, it's just word of mouth. For some, it's a sales force. For a few, it's online. For some, it's seminars. But most entrepreneurs, particularly the smaller ones, only do one thing. In this kind of economy, you are extremely benefited and advantaged when you implement multiple approaches at the same time. For example, if you've never had a sales force and you can recruit a sales force that predominantly gets paid on commission and you are generous on your commission and they can reach different markets, local and distant, that's great. If you can set up multiple strategic partnerships that you never had before with companies or organizations or media that have never been accessible to you, it could give you direct and exclusive access. If you could make arrangements with companies that sell products or services that are purchased before people buy yours, that would be good. But there are a multitude of commercial businesses. There are a multitude of organizations. There are a multitude of media. There are a multitude of complementary, non-competitive products and services that you can start partnering with, and they can be more profitable and generate more business than the approach you've been using up until now. But if you build 3 or 4 or 5 sources that you operate continuously, it will expand your business by geometric levels. Can you try to shake that up and explain it? The next thing we're going to look at, there's 3 ways to grow a business, but there are 3 additional ways to grow a business, and they're very valuable in a adverse economy. How do you get people to buy more things more often? You do it 4 ways. 1 is you reward them with better prices for buying long term. 2, you reward them with bonuses for buying long term. 3, you get them to authorize you to automatically bill them for delivering products to them or services long term. 5, you basically show them why they are better off getting product services regularly than occasionally, because they will have a better outcome. There are many other ways, but the first thing is psychologically, you have to be able to give the buyer a reason why or reasons why they should commit long term. And so you have to think about it, because if you just wait for them to buy, most companies wait for people to buy. And it's an erratic, it's an episodic, it's an unpredictable process. Rather, you want to program or lock in a certainty that they will buy every month or every 2 weeks or every 3 weeks. And you have many different ways to go at it. And the only reason I'm giving you all these different ways, Fiona, is that it depends on the product service that they sell, whether it's consumer, reconsumptive, whether it's commercial, whether it's service, product. But I think you can play with that, so take your time. The first one is to penetrate a new market, and that can mean a number of things. It can mean getting salespeople to take your product or service beyond the current geographic limitations that you are in. Pardon me. It can mean taking it to a different industry than you are in. It can mean taking it to a different usage than you are in. And again, depends on the product or service. But the first thing is penetrate new markets. The next one is introduce new products or services. That does not mean that you have to create, develop, or own a product or service. You can make a partnership with anyone else who has products or services that are appropriate for the same market you serve, and you negotiate very advantageous profit splits because you've already got the buyer. The cost of attracting and building trust with the buyer is the biggest cost you will make. Once the buyer trusts you, if you introduce different products or services, as long as they make sense, they will trust you to buy them. So if you only have a limited amount of product or services, adding two or three or four new ones could double or redouble your business, your profits, the frequency of purchases. So the key is to find other companies that already have products or services that would be very appealing to your market, and make arrangements where you receive a significant enough portion of the profit ongoing for making that product available to your market. It's a negotiating process, it's a value creating process, and it's a paradigm expanding process. That's the second way. The third way is to acquire other either similar or complementary businesses, but buy them without spending any cash up front. And I've got to explain this. So in a bad economy, there are a number of quality people who are not as marketing focused as everybody here. They're probably very hard workers, but they are struggling and their businesses are in trouble. So before they go out of business, if they have a good relationship and they have buyers, you can go to them and you can buy their business, whether it is the same or whether it sells a product that either complements, meaning you buy it before, during, or after yours, or a service, and you can add it to your business and pay them a share of the future revenue that you are able to save. Now, why is this valuable? Number one, you already have a fixed overhead. You can incorporate their business into yours for very little extra cost. Number two, if they have a good reputation, some number, whether it's dozens or hundreds or thousands of their clients, can become yours. Number three, you will have buyers if it's not the same business but complementary for your product. If companies start going out of business, see if you can buy their telephone numbers, because if people call them, they will get you. And I can give you a lot more, but I don't want you to have to remember all this, so I'll wait for a minute. Go ahead. So I'm going to give you two more things, and then I'm going to suggest that we stop temporarily and see if people have comments or questions, okay?
Okay.
But I'm going to give you two more things. So the next thing you do in a bad economy is you carefully study your existing buyer base, and you look at everybody who has been inactive or has been inconsistent as a buyer, and you contact them. Oftentimes, the owner loses contact with their clients. And when you contact them from your heart and you say you haven't bought frequently or you haven't bought for a while and it's important to us that we serve you, and if we ever did anything to upset you, it's important that we make it right. Your business is more important to us today than ever before, and I want you to know that we are here for you and we will serve you better than any other choice you can make. And if you do that to 100 or 200 or 300 people that have gotten inactive, you won't get them all back, but you will get a third or more of them, and that's very important to regaining more profitability in your business. What we've done so far today is examine, explore, and evaluate a number of proven and relatively simple but powerful ways that everybody on this call can make their business perform more profitably, more powerfully, more successfully in a bad market. What I'd like now is to use part of the remaining time for them to either ask questions or make comments of either things they realize and they're going to do or whatever, because I think it's very important when you have access to me that they take advantage of it. So why don't you see if everybody or anybody or many people have comments that are like realizations that they could share with everybody, that would be valuable, or questions they would like me to expand on. Okay, and then we'll see where we are. Okay. This is the big message that I wanted to share tonight before they break for the holiday.
Hi, Jay. I told them we have the question period, question session, so I give them 2 minutes.
Good.
Some industries, they are affected by the law of the government, by the whole economy a lot. Even we use all those strategies very well, but still the marketing is shrinking. Like in Hong Kong, the real estate market is really bad. Even you trying to bonus or everything, it's still going down. So this whole business is shrinking. Yeah. So at this time, some people want to change to a new industry. So if can you please give people suggestions if people want to change to a better new industry, what points should they pay attention to? How they can find a good industry to have, how to find a good new industry to?
Yes, great question. Great question. And we actually have a program that we did for Japan, for Malaysia, and for London on how to buy a great business or start one. There are many people who are in a business that is limited. And if you want to find new business, here are the criteria you want to look at. Number one, highly repetitive. Number two, bad marketing. Number three, limited value creation in the industry. Number four, you can get control of it very inexpensively. Number five, if you can do one, you can acquire many others and put them together. Number six, that it lends itself massively to the marketing instruction and training that I have given you. Number seven, that it is a business that can be replicated. So if you buy one, you can replicate it over and over again. It's not terribly complex. Number eight, it's not so restricted by the government that you are controlled or constrained. And many people that I am helping today have looked at their current companies and realized that those companies cannot get them the result, the economic outcomes, the futures they want. So they are either using those companies as financing sources to acquire other companies, or they are selling them and using the resources to acquire other companies. Normally, I don't recommend starting a company from scratch. I think it's easier and cheaper if you can buy a company that is fundamentally good, but is a terrible marketer, hasn't really developed its advantages, and can be multiplied by acquiring other ones, and you can buy them for little or no money down, but take them over. I would make a list, and if you want on our next call, I can give you a 10 or 20 checklist criteria to look for in a company you might want, or a business or an industry you might want to take over. But the most important thing, if it's not repetitive, then you have a disadvantage because you've got to work so hard for the initial sale. What you want optimally is something you sell once but get paid for over and over and over again, if not forever, for a long period, and that you can then add more products or services to. Number two, or three, whatever our category is, you want industries that are not good marketers, that are not distinctive, that do not understand how to add more value to their proposition, that do not understand any of the concepts we have discussed today. And you want to look at not just the first one, but many ones, because you can take control of a lot of struggling businesses and you can change their overhead structure, their marketing structure, their selling structure, and turn a marginal business very profitable, and then start taking over more and more other businesses like them and put together a big, like a conglomerate. Can you explain all that? But let's do a deeper discussion on our next call, because we're out of time.